सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ Now we are beginning the Q&A, questions and answers with guest speakers. A few announcements. Those of you who ask questions, please direct your questions and identify the speaker from whom you expect a response. That's one. And then if you just put up your hands, our devotee friends will approach you, come to you and give you, hand over you the mic and you can ask questions. And please be brief and focused in asking your questions. And yeah, that's important. If you want to make long statements, most welcome after the session is over. Because all of you will get opportunities to meet speakers. You know, after the vote of thanks, we will have plenty of time to privately meet the speakers and discuss whatever you want to discuss with them. Most welcome. But when you ask questions, please be brief and focused. Those who want to ask questions, please put up your hands. Any kind of questions, except those dealing with some controversial political questions, can be avoided. Anything related to spirituality, religion, you know, Swamiji Vidhamohanandaji discussed, gave a brief idea of how interfaith movement is working in European continent. He travels all over the Europe, not only France and Spain, but different countries in Europe. So you can direct your questions to Swamiji. And Barbara O'Brien, of course, he dealt with different reflections of interfaith ideas in the literary traditions, different languages and traditions, so you can direct your questions. And also, if you want to ask questions to me, most welcome. Thank you. Namaskar.
My question has to do with Mary Baker Eddy.
Yes.
And her concept of the divine mind, all is mind.
Yes.
And I'm thinking about Brahman, the non-dual Nirguna,
yes,
Brahman, not the Saguna dualistic Brahman.
Yes.
Is her concept of the divine mind equal to or the same as Nirguna Brahman, or is it at some other dualistic level?
I would say it's at the non-dual level, yes.
Thank you.
Hello, thank you. It's to anyone who wants to take the question. I was wondering if anyone has investigated the Baha'i principle of progressive revelation, or investigated and share any reflections on the twin manifestations, the Bab and Baha'u'llah.
It's about progressive revelations of the Supreme Truth. Well, I think it is more or less in a way similar to the Jewish prophetic tradition, where every commandment brings about a new paradigm of revelations, you know. Every prophet brings forth a new paradigm. So the paradigm shift essentially is taken from the Jewish theological tradition when Thomas Kuhn wrote the famous book, you know, The Structural Revolutions, you know, of Physics, Science, etc. So that's one view. Truth going on progressing more and more of the reality getting revealed. But that is somewhat different from Vedantic tradition. In Vedantic tradition, once you realize the truth, once you experience the truth, you realize it in its wholeness, completeness. Progressive revelation of kind of, I mean, God's wisdom coming in installments, each representing a new paradigm, is somewhat alien to Advaita tradition, non-dualistic tradition. So,
I shall try to answer your question by the non-dualistic view of point of view. Absolute, it is pure consciousness itself. You may say, what is it, pure consciousness? How can we perceive it, know it? There is this possibility. Pure consciousness expresses itself as the harmony of pure energy. Not only physical energy, entire universal energy, it is the expression of pure consciousness. So energy, we certainly can feel it. Second aspect of it is luminosity. See, it is the energy at a particular degree of vibration expresses itself as luminosity. It's the same luminosity that is there in us. And then it is this luminosity that expresses itself as beauty. What we appreciate beauty everywhere, it is nothing but this beauty that expresses itself. The harmony of these three aspects put together, it is love. You may question, what is love? We know what is love in human relationships. No. What is called love, it is the expression of one's heart. Every cell and molecule of your body gives that expression like waves. Perhaps you might be knowing from the bioscience, every cell has the capacity to express it. The cell has three aspects. One is material aspect. Inside it, there is a space where all kinds of impressions are stored up through the antenna. A small antenna, microscopic. It is that that receives. And through that, the force of love expresses itself. So, love is intelligence. You may say, how love is intelligence? When we love an object or whatever it is, we try to know why it is, how it is, from where it is. All sorts of questions come up. All questions of research starts developing. So that means through research, you want to know why, how, and when and where. That is the knowledge. That is the power of intelligence. That is why what is called love. Love is intelligence. Intelligence reveals the true knowledge. Here, there is difference between the, what is called manifest knowledge and direct experience. So it is the pure intelligence that expresses itself as knowledge. So when we know what is real, we are happy. This joy, inner joy, the Vedanta calls it ananda, bliss. So in a way, we can experience it. Well then, in our everyday life, how are we to be progressive? It depends to the extent that we are able to bring these aspects in our personality. Generally, as you know it, we are away from these aspects. We are dominated by the material forces everywhere, every moment of our life. It is because of the dominance of material vibrations, this vibration becomes clouded or suppressed or contracted. So we can feel it. to the extent you take your consciousness to infinity. You may say, how am I to take my consciousness to infinity? For example, infinity like blue space. We can go on expanding our consciousness in the space. Well, you may say, space is not blue, but the color blue, it is the support to our consciousness to expand itself. So you have no limit to expand your consciousness in this space. Well, the infinite space, it is pure consciousness itself. So it is this pure consciousness, as I said, expresses itself as the harmony of pure energy. Is there no energy in the universe, in the galaxies, in the planets? Everywhere there is energy. It is the same energy, same life force that expresses itself in this psychophysics. So, if you are able to connect ourselves to this infinite reality through the consciousness, it starts manifesting itself in our personality. So when this reality starts manifesting itself in our personality, your needs and wants become minimized. The inner emotions become lessened or harmonized. Agitations become less and less. Your love becomes spontaneous. Your intelligence functions rightly as how to do, when to do, why to do. So it is combined by this opening up of ourselves. So this is how a progressive life is lived. It can be felt, it can be practiced. There are people who practice it. There are people who find the transformation through such practices. I think I have answered the question.
I just wanted to thank Barbara for that excellent talk today. And I think it was inspired to mention Aldous Huxley and his perennial philosophy, because he sort of sums up in this beautiful book, the ideals of interfaith through these great mystics throughout the ages. And you also mention another wonderful thinker, Gerald Hurd. And Hurd, and this is a comment, and then there'll be a question, and it'll be short. But Gerald Hurd came to Southern California with Aldous Huxley, I think in 1937. And Gerald had already met, or he met very soon, Swami Prabhavananda, and he introduced Aldous to Swami, and they both took to Vedanta like a house of fire, and they were quick learners, and it was just a wonderful time for Vedanta in the West, and I just wanted to mention Aldous Huxley as part of the fruit of that. Then the question, Barbara, is Mary Baker Eddy is so associated with healing. Healing of the body, healing of problems of all kinds. And I wonder if you might share something about her work in this area. She said once that healing is accomplished through divine love, that there's no other power that can do it but that. But I would be interested just to know if you have any thoughts about it.
I think I mentioned that the last 100 pages of the book are accounts of people who were healed of all kinds of ailments just from reading the book. They never met her. So that would be, I'm not sure it's on, one place to start. But yes, it was something that she did almost spontaneously, as it were, from childhood. Her father used to bring her, say, the sick animals, or if there was one in a a litter that was particularly, wasn't strong, didn't look like it might make it, he would bring it to her and she would nurse it back to health. But I guess, I could just tell one account that comes to mind. Actually, it was going to be in my talk, but there wasn't time. I had left it out long ago. And it's about a woman who came up to visit. There was a big event at Mary Baker Eddy's home in, it was in Pleasant View. That was the name of her, sort of like an ashram, really. And it was in New Hampshire. And the mother had come from the Midwest with her two small children. And the little girl, who was about 7, had a very painful boil on her head. It had gotten larger and more inflamed as they came across the country by train, so that by the time they went that morning, it was a July 4th morning, the little girl was just in tears. You know, her head hurt so much. So they went through the line afterwards, through the reception line. And I just happened to have the account of the mother who told what happened in this event. Excuse me, just a moment. So the mother, they went through the line, and the mother says, Mrs. Eddy, Mary Baker Eddy, looked at the children and then looked at me. Then she looked back at them again and threw a kiss to each one of them, and somebody told them to pass along. I followed them. I wish I could make the world know what I saw when Mrs. Eddy looked at those children. It was a revelation to me. I saw for the first time the real mother love, and I knew that I did not have it. I had a strange, agonized sense of being absolutely cut off from the children. It is impossible to put into words what the uncovering of my own lack of real mother love meant to me. As I turned in the procession and walked toward the line of trees in the front yard, there was a bird sitting on the limb of a tree, and I saw the same love poured out on that bird that I had seen flow from Mrs. Eddy to my children. I looked at the grass and the flowers, and there was the same love resting on them. The love was everywhere like the light, but it was divine, not mere human affection. I looked at the people milling around on the lawn, and I saw it poured out on them. It was not only everywhere present like the light, but it was, as Swami said, an intelligent presence that spoke to me, and I found myself weeping as I walked back and forth under the trees, saying out loud, "Why did I never know you before? Why have I not always known you?" So then her little boy calls her and says, "Mother, it's time to go home." She gets in the carriage, and she's the same love as everywhere. When we got back to the hotel, there was no boil on my child's head. It was just as flat as the back of her hand. And then she says that for a long time afterwards, I think it was, she doesn't say exactly, for weeks, she said, "I could not bear to hear anyone speak in a cross, ill-tempered tone or do anything that would cause pain." So that is just one example. This sort of thing happened to her just frequently.
Hello, Swamiji's and Barbara. Wonderful talks, great ideas regarding interfaith harmony and the efforts that have been made. Mostly I heard from Swami Vitto Mohananda. I hope I pronounced the word and name right. What my question is, you mentioned several times about all the great religions, Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity and Judaism, and except either a stray mention of Sufism. I hardly heard anything being mentioned about the other great religion, Islam. Is it just an accident? And I don't mean this to be a political, you know, question. I don't. Thank you.
Yes. Generally, I am more close to Sufism. But it is not to say that we neglect the general Muslims. They do come to us. They participate in our interreligious meets. They also live with us. There is no problem, as you see externally. For example, a Pakistani doctor living here, he comes every year to us. He demonstrates the namaz. Everyone participates in it. We have no any kind of hesitation in accepting the practices. Well, only difference is that they don't like to do their namaz where the representations are kept. They need an empty hall. We provide an empty hall. They are happy. We are happy. Participants are happy. So we do have connection with the general Islamic traditions as well.
I think you have to admit the fact you cannot run away from the reality that mainstream Islam may have some doctrinal problems when they indulge in interreligious dialogue activities with other religious traditions. Especially, I have myself participated in international interfaith dialogues in India. So one area of difference that they often put forward is that in Christian, Buddhist, Jewish, of course Hindu traditions, there is always some scope for somebody within the mainstream to come forward and say, we have to change. We have to give a new interpretation to some of these doctrinal principles. But in the mainstream Islam, unlike in Sufism and Baha'ism, if you call it Islam, there is not that kind of scope for a reform from within, especially for giving a new modern interpretation to the doctrinal, what you call doctrinal principles of Islam. Correct. That's the main difference. So they themselves come forward. They are very broad-minded. They are very open. They say, see, a Christian theologian can perhaps give a new interpretation to the teachings of St. Paul, letters to Corinthians or Grecians, or even the New Testament itself as a whole. So also a Buddhist can give a new interpretation. And if you go to India, you find there are any number of reformers who give their own interpretations to the most fundamental teachings of Hinduism. No problem. Absolutely no problem. But in mainstream Islam, because of the emphasis, again, only in mainstream Islam, and even among the more conservative groups, there is so much emphasis on this basic principle that every word, every comma, every single letter in the holy text is coming from God. So you have no right or the wisdom. It is totally wrong on your part to change it or to give it a new meaning in the form of a new interpretation. So that's a view. I think that also can be accommodated within the main platform of interfaith activities. That's what I just... Okay, thank you.